This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 4, IDN's Technical and Operations held on the 4th of May, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Cheryl Langdon-Orr. Please begin.
Thank you, Terry. It's Cheryl Langdon-Orr speaking, and I'd like to welcome you on behalf of Rubens and I to our 10th meeting at 0300 UTC on the 4th of May of the subsequent procedures for new GTLDs with Team 4, IDN Technical and Operations meeting. And hopefully my audio is all right, but Terry will type at me if it's not. You've all been sent the agenda if you're on our list. It came out the middle of last week, and if we now progress to the next slide, we'll do a very quick review of the agenda with me currently running the welcome and opening remarks, and the slide reminded me to ask all of you if any of you have an update to your statements of interest. Not seeing any hands and not hearing anyone make an intervention. Let's assume that we are all unchanged since the last time we met and move on then to ask, is there any other business that anyone wishes to raise for today's agenda? We've noticed, we'll obviously ask again at the end of the call. Again, not hearing any, we'll move on with the agenda as presented here today. We have a minor adjustment to the agenda that was sent out last week, and that is that we had an item on the end of the agenda, which was a if time permits. We will be moving that particular conversation regarding the FBAC and the FBAC advice, which was listed as time permitting, to our next meeting, because we are absolutely delighted to tell you that Patrick Folsom will be able to join us at that next meeting, and we'll be able to have a full and iterative discussion on that particular topic for the whole of that meeting. And I'm
Excuse me, if my sound is choppy, all I can do is adjust my microphone and see if that's any better. With that, let's see if we can now ask, I think, Jess. He steps forward between Jeff and Avery to take us through a very brief full workgroup update. Let me try that one in English. Full workgroup update. Over to you, Jeff. There we go.
Okay, thanks. And hopefully I don't sound choppy. I'll look at the chat to see if anyone's got any issues. So the full group update, really short update. Emily just posted earlier today. Emily just posted our proposed final response to the CCT review team interim report, and we are leaving it open now for comments up until, I believe, Monday. So if you have any final comments that you want to make on it, let us know. If not, we plan on sending it to the CCT review team later on next week. Also, just a reminder that we are not having any meetings next week. That's no full group call, no work track one, no work track two, even though they'd be next in the rotation, because many people are going to be at the GDD summit next week in Madrid. So we are basically taking that week off. We will begin immediately the following week on Monday. I'm forgetting the date right now. I should be able to do this in my head. But I believe it'll be the 15th, if I'm not mistaken. And so on that week, we will have full group call. We'll have work facts 1 and 2 that week. And it's not until the following week we'll have tracks 3 and 4. So the next call for work track 4 will not be for another 3 weeks. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And in fact, I'm going to pass the buck immediately as we move the slide to our next slide. Thanks, Terry. And Rubens is going to take us through the next agenda item. Over to you, Rubens.
Thank you, Cheryl. Good day, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Today we'll go through, start first with ancient history, then we'll move to recent history, and then to present discussions about main collisions. So first we'll go to ancient history to some archaeology. Next slide, please. Before we go to full history slides here, let us start with a possible work definition that we use along our discussions of main collisions that was taken from the ICANN main collisions website, which was content created more recently in the process, but I will read it out loud. It defines main collisions not as a definition, but how it happens. It says, a main collision occurs when an attempt to resolve a main using a private name space under a non-delegatable domain name or a short and qualified domain name results in a query to the public domain name system. And when the administrative boundaries of private and public name space overlap, name resolution may yield unintended harmful results. This is taken directly from the ICANN main collisions website. I thought that this definition, although it's not an assertive definition, saying, oh, it is this, and that, it's simpler to understand that the mathematical definition that I found proposed by some other authors. So we use that definition for the time being, unless someone complains about the definition and comes with a better one that is both precise and intelligible for our policy development audience. With this definition, I want to define a bit that what causes main collisions. There are a myriad of things, but one of the causes are software behavior. It has been long time implemented in many layers of software, in networking software, of trying to guess what the user was trying to reach out. So sometimes one application can just type one word and it's, oh, okay, you are probably going to the company internet website. So let me append the company domain. Or, oh, this is a short name. I can't find this one, but I can find this other one that is very common. So we probably wanted to go there. As the phrase mentioned, no good deeds go unpunished, and those attempts to guess what the user wanted ended up causing possible issues because users get used to some behavior, and that behavior could change depending on an outside factor. Other causes of main collision included deliberate configuration of something that previously was not a TLD. So before the large extension initial this program, most people use it to, oh, there is only .com, .net, .org, and that other CCTLDs are there, and anything else is not used. So if I need something for my private user, I can use anything I want. Other causes of main collision, including users of roaming devices. were not previously so common, so pervasive. Because once upon a time, most computers were fixed to desks or to walls, and now we start to have notebook computers, mobile phones, and those devices, they roam between network environments. It can be in a corporate network, subject to it, some set of configurations, and it can be on public network, in a coffee shop, in using a hotspot or something, but they are now under a different set of network configuration. And they can also be caused by application bugs, because sometimes the application primitives called APIs use the same primitives for both network connections and file and open file. This happens specifically in Unix-derived operating systems, but also today most mobile operating systems, even Apple iOS or Android. So this can also happen. So sometimes people would see requests going to the root that have some file name extension that they say, well, why is that? This is not a host name. This is an extension to a file name. That's also a main collision, in this case between a namespace of storage, file storage, and namespace of over the network. Before I move on, let me try to address what's in the chat. They said that he's not sure, and so it's like, well, we need to state what causes it. It's usually good to know what are the factors that cause some of the issues, but this list is certainly not completely. There can be any other failure model that we cannot predict. It's just a list of what seems so far as most commonly generated main collisions. But let me see if Jeff and Anne want to add something to this discussion. If someone does, just raise his or her hands. Jeff, go ahead, please.
Maybe this is, this is Jeff Newman. I think I'm just not quite as technical as you are, I guess, but I'm just trying to think of, you know, when we try to write this up as a report, I like the way that, the ESSAC had described what a name collision was in ESSAC 45 or 46, can't remember now. I know that's coming up. But I think we should just, thanks Rubens, 45. It just basically happens, you know, when there's a configuration where the party, where one party had expected a certain type of response, and because the TLD is delegated, or expects to get a certain response from a TLD that's not delegated, but then all of a sudden, because of the delegation of the TLD, they now get a referral response as opposed to the expected response. But anyway, I'll be quiet on this. I wasn't sure what the roaming devices by application bug meant, and I think you explained a little bit of it, but this may not be an issue. I'll just wait till we get to the other slides. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Just this comment on TAC 45. TAC 45 was issued in 2010, so we now have the benefit of more knowledge of research throughout these years. So TAC 45 mentioned possibly one or two of the vectors that contributed to that problem, probably not all of them, but they already at that point got most of the problems already. So we can move to next slide, please. We can go move through our history of main collisions. And here we have. The first mention I could find, so although a collision first described, first mention I could find was in a 2009 Circle ID post by George Kirikos. When he mentioned, oh, this popular invalid TLD should be reserved. The link is over there in the slide. That blog post had a call to action specifically to SEC, urging SEC to look into the issue, which they did, and ended up issuing 745 in November 2010. In both Circle ID blog post and the SEC report, they mention some TLDs that that person and that could find to be too risky to delegate, and that includes some TLDs that were actually prevented from being applied for, like local and localhost. Some were allowed, but nobody applied for it, like .LAN, which is the acronym for Local Area Network. But two of those that were mentioned in SEC 45 and were mentioned in that Circle ID post, when they mentioned invalid CODs and invalid top-level domain queries, were .home and .core. So when I can say to those applicants that they haven't taken a look at all the information available, ICANN is probably right. Although ICANN ended up forbidding one TLD that I haven't found a mention before, the application window, which was .mail. In those information in 2009 and 2010, most people mentioned possible operational issues that could arise. But these issues ended up not getting that much attention either from ICANN, the organization, or from each TLD applicant. But we have Avery on the line to ask or say something about that. Go on, Avery.
Yes, thank you. This is Avery speaking. I just wanted to make one thing that I thought was really quite good in 45, and I'm not sure that it ever happened, but basically it wasn't so much saying that most of the collisions were too dangerous to delegate. What was indicating is that some of them had risks and had dangers for the registry that would be dealing with them, and basically made quite a point in its recommendations about warning applicants of what sort of issues they might face. And that was approach. I don't think the AGB ever took it, but and this was at the time when the AGB was still being written. So I think that is a good point to remember, and perhaps we want to look at again when it comes time to make recommendations, is that later, you know, and I'm sure you'll get to that, people talked about, you know, various other mitigations and various rather draconian solutions to some names, but and I am speaking personally here, but at other points, at this point, they were basically still saying there's an issue here, it needs to be dealt with and understood by the applicant. So that kind of perspective is probably something worth keeping in mind. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Next we have Anne. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Rubens. It's Anne Ickman-Scalise for the transcript. I have a question about whether controlled interruption, which I think was one of the mitigation techniques discussed, was applied in any TLD that was delegated, because as I understand the name collision issue, the questions revolve around sort of the number of named collisions that are likely, or whether the high risk of named collisions. And I just don't know the facts as to whether controlled interruption, where the user is sent to a screen that says, guess what, you're outside your internal server and trained for a certain period, was that used in connection with any TLDs that were delegated? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. We should probably table the question for the part where you mentioned the mitigation measures in each TLDs, but I'll just give a hint of the answer. That the answer is yes, it was used, but it was not actually a screen. It was a response that pointed to the internal network, but some browsers decoded the response as, oh, this is what happened, and then they assemble a screen for the user. It was not an actual page that was being served from server on over there. Next, we have Jeff. Please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I think I was going to say some the way it started initially and was that the TLDs that launched early were given a list of names which they had to then block, but could delegate other names. Then it became a system whereby ICANN approved each registry would, for 90 days, once the TLD is delegated, the first 90 days would put a wild card essentially into their zone, so that anyone that tried to search for any name under that TLD would be sent to, the query would be sent to a static IP address, which produced essentially would look like an error to anybody else, but essentially it would return a result where it was thought that if someone were checking their logs, they would see this strange IP address that's never been used for anything, would do a lookup in Google or wherever, see what that meant, and then they'd find out and essentially would get, would see the ICANN resource page associated, or that used, I think, that IP address as a keyword. So Rubens is right. It wasn't a web page, but it was a result which would look unusual to a network administrator, and when they searched to see what that meant, they would get the ICANN name collision space. And that was implemented for every TLD after the first couple hundred that were delegated. It was implemented as well for even the earlier ones, just at a later time period. So controlled interruption was in every single new TLD.
Thank you, Jeff. Can we move along and then retable that question when that team comes? If you could move to the next slide, please. And next slide. So, by the time you have the 2012 application round, there was still some conversation about name collisions, not calling name collisions at that point. But then, in Q1 2013, one big security issue was discovered, was published by FSEC as 057, when you could have internal name certificates, website certificates, could be used to circumvent security policies of networks that used internal names. So if I had one, if my company is called Acme, and they have one certificate like acme.org, previously someone could get a certificate for acme.org, both me and an attacker and someone trying to hack the network. But that attack could only be done locally. So it would either need to be done inside the company network or at an environment where you have access to company issued devices, possibly a coffee shop across the street or something like that. But if those names could be delegated, that risk would now be extended globally. So someone could anywhere issue a certificate for a name, for an unregistered domain name that could be also captured company information, company credentials, etc. This effectively turned the heat up on this issue because now, besides possible operational issues that were mentioned in FATF 45, now there is a clear threat vector that could be exploited. And this threat vector was partially due to the expansion of the initial the space, part due to the procedures of the certification authorities that previously was somewhat lazy, you know, regarding non-delegate TLD. So if there was a non-delegate TLD, anyone could get a certificate to their TLD because they couldn't verify who would be the rightful owner of such a certificate. This triggered an ICOM Commission study that was done by a consultant called InterIO. And this study basically mingled FATF 45, FATF 57, and their own views on the problem, and significantly painted what they could say as possible harms. Systems could malfunction, applications could malfunction, and you could have that information security threat vector. This was the famous or infamous study that classified TLDs in risk levels, high risk, unknown risk, low risk, and presented lots of TLD from delegation and ended up restricting a lot of names, which will come in the next slide. And publication of this study also started a battle between other actors, some that were overplaying the consequence, say, oh, this cannot only do harm to system, this can do harm to human life, people can die. And others were downplaying the possible effect of it, saying that it was a non-issue, it was something that only required few minimal care, and so forth. And one of the problems that in making those arguments, both sides had good points, and both sides had strong vested interests and tried to make a lot of noise either to one end or to the other end. What ICANN did at the time was making a fork in the road and allowing TLDs, most TLDs, but not the ones with uncalculated risk or high risk, to be delegated, provided they abide to a blocking list. That blocking list was based on every occurrence that of a name based on the root service on the years that where they could study, which is the year where there is data about queries to the root service. This was the infamous APD list, alternate path to delegations. So if you want to sign a contract with ICANN at that point and delegate your TLD, you have to agree to that. They also commission a new study that was commissioned with JICE Advisors, which would eventually create the name collisions framework that will be used on a permanent basis. And at that point, CA Browser Forum ended up correcting their procedures. They stopped issuing new certificates on internal names, and they started making a deadline for revocation for the already issued names. And they also had one mechanism that were passed part of the alternate special delegation, which would establish a period for them to revoke issued certificates after PIDs were signed. These were not good times in the program because people were angry about both delays and not being allowed to hash the most of the interesting domain names. But most people see, oh, let's see, because that's the best forward we have. Seeing the comments here in the chat, I think I will continue moving to the slide. So next slide, please. What ended up being suggested by JICE Advisors, but was considering became in 2014 the name collision framework, that all PLDs, or in the case of PLDs that were already delegated, the names that they reserved would need to go for a controlled interruption period of 90 days. During that period, an invalid response would be issued, as Jeff already mentioned, and that invalid response would warn the user that, hey, something is wrong, but the information was made that it would point to the internal network or even the internal device that was trying to access the network, so people wouldn't be exposed we don't have information leakage, but they would say, oh, now something is wrong, so now we need to find out what it is and we need to do something about it. After 2014 to today, ICANN reports that they have knowledge of 37 occurrences that have been formally reported to the increased report channels to ICANN. ICANN had to evaluate each occurrence to see if anyone were life-threatening or not, and none were found to be life-threatening, which was not surprising, since people usually don't connect devices that are capable to take human life on the Internet. There are some other collisions that either were reported directly to registries, and some were not reported at all. Some people note, oh, I know what's happening, and just fixed it. So that's the end of our story so far. So if you could move on to the next slide, please. Next slide, please. So now we come to possible policy options for the next procedures we have about. We might have some other policy options, but I took those from the CC2 question. So seeing that we have already agreed on what will be the second set of questions for money consulting, that's already over there. So I urge your stakeholder group or constituency to post comments, including comments to those questions. One of the questions, which is maybe the one 442, is should there be a list of names to be excluded from the process? Because in the previous procedure, right, the policy guidance didn't have any list of names to be excluded. The actual AGB, African Guidebook, had a list of names that you couldn't apply to, but some people would like that list to be more expanded, possibly to include TLD that were already listed, possibly to include TLD that were now reserved in the IATF process, like Dot Onion. So would there be a list of names? Should we make such a list? If we should make such a list, how we would do such a list? So that's the first policy question we have to make. So since nobody's raising his or her hand, move to 443. Which was actually a list of question of the control interruption period was enough or was too long or too short. And there is one data point we can look at, which is the report on the routine stability, the CIDA report, that somewhat implies that the 6-day period could be enough. The report doesn't say that, because the report wasn't trying to look at that question. It was trying to look at the root stability. But if that data would be the only data point, and if you would do a quantitative analysis, it probably won't to go to a 6-day period. But most people during the discussion mentioned for 90-day period also due to qualitative reasons, like quarterly process and things like that. But that's one of the other policy options we have for it to see if 6 days would be enough or not. And on a more general question that could be include both 441 and 443, should we initiate the interruption, controlled interruption period at delegation to a hash history, or should we initiate that before? For instance, if ICANN would delegate to itself every TLD that was applied for at review day, and while it evaluates the application, it already has started the control interruption period, so it could go for a possibly more than 90 days until application is evaluated, until a contract is signed, and until that registry delegated. So even people that could think, oh, we should have a longer control interruption period, that period could be made not to overlap with the actual time, time to delegation, time to usage of the TLD. That's also another policy option, is whether this responsibility should lie with ICANN or with the registry. At the 2012 round, it lied with the registry. The registry had to implement the ICANN mandated resource records and monitor the outcomes of such implementation. So these are the possible policy questions that we could look at and see if we go one way or another way. Any takers on commenting any of those policy options? If not, I will take my chair hat off and start suggesting some of my own. But Anne Scalise has now raised her hand, so I can mention that those before. Please go ahead, Anne.
Yes, thank you, Rubens. It's Anne for the transcript. And the comment I wanted to make was just that it appears name collision issues are not necessarily one size fits all. So that when we talk about, there's this whole area of what the new GTLD program committee did with the 90-day controlled interruption, that applies, I guess, to a certain number of TLDs that were not considered high risk. There were others that were characterized as high risk and need to be permanently reserved, and one of the things raised in the SAC 90 report was, and I think Jeff noted this in the chat, that there needs to be coordination between ICANN and the IETF on reserve strings, so that's a good point. I think there may also need to be an update to the JAS Advisors report. I don't know for certain, but maybe things have changed. Maybe they have not changed. So the point being, it's not one size fits all with respect to every name collision risk. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Anne. Thanks, Rubens. And I want to agree with Anne to the extent that we can get more data, not necessarily from JAS Advisors, but to the extent we can get updated data on the number of reported collisions, because I think that was back in 2014 or 15, when they looked at that. So I do think we need to get updated data on the collisions, but I'm not sure I necessarily agree with the one size fits all. I thought one of our recommendations, or maybe something that was discussed, was to see if there were any other strings on that we should be blocking, or not blocking that, but that should be a more permanent reservation based on more recent studies of the day in the life data of the route. But even some of the ones, if you go back and you look at the very first reports by, I think it was by JAS Advisors that looked at every single string that was applied for and grouped some as higher risks than others, I would think once you look at the data, you're going to find that those did not result in a large number of collisions or complaints about collisions. And so I think this one solution has actually worked for every single TLD with the exception of Home Corp and Mail, is that the third one? Which haven't been launched, so we don't know what the impact would be. I don't know to what extent JAS Advisors are still around. I don't know to what extent they could do an update if they still are around. But we should, even if it's not JAS Advisors, I'm not sure we necessarily need an independent body to get the data, but it would be good to get additional, data on what's happened since. There's no evidence that this one-size solution didn't work. In fact, there's only evidence of the opposite in the sense that there have been no reported issues from this implementation mechanism. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. I tried to address points raised by Anne and Jeff. One is about the one-size-fits-all. Actually, although they mentioned two risk scales, high risk and the other, they used a one-size-fits-all approach. For instance, every comment that the TLD applicants made during this process listed IBM TLDs as TLDs possibly not needing any collision management. Because nobody would normally use IDNs for their internal networks, etc. But what ICANN did was put every low risk and somewhat low risk or medium risk or any risk that was not high in the sandbox. They applied one-size-fits-all approach to that. That can be understood that because this was operationally much simpler for them to have a one-size-fits-all framework. The other mention about one-size-fits-all that if those high-risk TLDs were to be delegated, they would require very different main collision framework. So some people in the community already mentioned possible mitigation framework specific for those TLDs. I mentioned one for mail in many public occasions, publicly, and even one of the applicants for .home mentioned in their application a possible mitigation mechanism for .home. So the ones in the high risk, they are still to be decided by ICANN whether they delegate under a specific framework for that TLD or they don't delegate at all. They never have answered definitely whether they delegate or not. They are just waiting there for people to withdraw their applications that they don't have to make a call, they don't have to make a decision. About using the day internet life for more recent years, one of the problems that have been pointed by many applicants is that since review day of the 2012 round applications, some people start become curious about those TLDs and start trying to access them. So there are now attempts to access those domains that are not collisions, that are actual usage of that. There are also some claims of people trying to gain the life data set. So this could, in the future, prevent delegation of specific TLDs. So it has become hard now to get newer and better information on those. And one of the angles of the JAS report was trying to not depend on that except for the high-risk TLDs. So they don't have to make a call using data that can be either poisoned or limited. One issue that should be known about the internet life, even though it's not just one day of packet capture, it's actually couple or 3 days in sequence. Even so, it's a sample. So if someone has some periodic procedure that doesn't happen on the days that someone is captured on the day internet life, that will not appear on the collision list. And because the data in detail is massive, unless something happens very frequently, people wouldn't know how to pick that specific data point from the data set because it's just one request. But that one request could be harmful to a specific network in a more catastrophic way than even some requests that are frequent, but those would be the ones easier to match. Let me see in the chat if Steve already mentioned why our question that we developed for JS were not answered because they would imply a new contract. Okay. And I think that's somewhat okay, but let me see if someone wants to speak on something, raise either of their hands. Victor asks, is there any new data fermentation study, new methods that have been introduced for this problem? No. The reference we have, most from 2014 and 2015, when both there was one event promoted by Verisign and another event promoted by University of the applicant on this topic. And the videos from those conferences are the best information available now for these. And these are all published, and these are very good material to look at to develop policy for the next procedures. Anne, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Rubens. I'm just noticing several of the comments in the chat, and one of them from Steve Chan is directed to me, in which he says that we have sent some questions to the GDD and that any sort of update from Jazz Advisors would involve a new contract, and I think that's absolutely true. But Steve then goes on to observe that given what Jeff has said about one size fits all, we probably don't need that. But I just wanted to point out, Steve, to you and others, that Jeff is not saying that one size fits all applies directly to the names that were recommended by Jazz to be permanently reserved, including .home, .corp, and .mail. He is saying that he believes one size fits all works for other TLDs, and he has acknowledged that in the chat. So I just wanted to mention that I do think this group still needs to be seeking, perhaps, a new evaluation from Jazz Advisors in relation to their recommendations with respect to permanent reservation. Second question I wanted to address was, I wanted to see if we could ask Patrick to brief us in the next call. Patrick, who's chair of the ESSEC, to brief us in the next call about coordination efforts with the IETF thus far, and let him know beforehand that we were going to ask that question. Thank you. And I see Jeff is acknowledging that he's saying that my characterization of his comment about one size fits all is correct. So thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Anne. Perhaps if Steve wants to respond, I don't know. Yes, please go ahead. It was on mute. Sorry.
Yeah, hey, Ruben. So it just occurred to me, and I put it in the chat, and Aubrey responded, but there is an IETF liaison that's assigned to the board that is supposed to be leading the coordination efforts between the IETF and ICANN. If possible, perhaps we could ask, I don't know how to pronounce the name, is it Jan? I may be totally mutilating that name. easily said by Aubrey. Yes, if we can invite, is that a male? I think it's a male, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. If we could invite him onto a call to talk about what efforts are underway, that might be beneficial as well.
Thank you, Jeff. I see Julie has her hand up. Please go ahead, Julie. Perhaps I was on mute again, or Julie on mute again. So Julie just mentioned that Patrick advises on our call in May 25 for the upcoming Commonwealth World Track 4. Thanks, Julie. So, nobody wants to speak, I'll pass back to Sherry. Please try to go ahead.
It's Cheryl here, coming off mute. Hopefully my sound isn't choppy. Well, we're hitting beautifully timed, Rubens. I'm very impressed. To the top of the hour. And I certainly think that we've had an excellent interaction today. And I think it's a good foundation for our next conversation where we will be exploring the ESAC advice in greater detail and have the benefit, of course, of Patrick Falstrom joining us on that call. To that end, I just wondered if anyone has thought of any other business they'd like to raise in the last 2 minutes of the call. Nobody jumping forward. I want to note Terry has obviously psychically connected herself to Rubens and I because she's just put into chat exactly what we were about to say, which is the next call where we will be having ESAC input and a specific conversation about ESAC advice on main collisions and some other matters is on the 25th of May at 1500 UTC for our usual 60 minutes. And with that, with under a minute on the clock left, it comes to me to thank all of you for your excellent inputs today. Thank staff, obviously, for capturing all of these points. And we do have a couple of pieces of discussion or point out of the chat, at least, that we do need to pick up as we go towards drafting some recommendations for the wider plenary to consider. So thank you for your time today. Thank you, staff. Thank you, one and all. And with that, we can stop the recording. Thank you, Terry, and bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned.